Imagine waking up to find yourself watching your own dead body on the ground, blood staining your sneakers. This is how we meet 12-year-old Jerone Rogers, both alive and dead simultaneously. "How small I look," he reflects, surprised by his diminutive appearance in death. "I thought I was bigger, tough, but I'm just a bit of nothing." As a ghost, Jerone watches his family's devastation unfold. His mother wailing as police hold her back, his father punching walls in grief, his grandmother insisting that every goodbye ain't gone, and his sister Kim retreating into books. What's particularly heartbreaking is Jerome's inability to comfort them. When he tries to touch his grieving mother as she lies on his basketball-themed bed with swollen eyes, his hand passes right through her. The apartment fills with mourners bringing food in what would seem like a celebration if not for the grief-stricken faces. Only his grandmother seems to sense something, turning when he moves or humming louder when he sits beside his father. As the family discusses his funeral, comparisons emerge between Jerome and other black boys killed because of racial prejudice. His grandmother mentions Emmett Till, another Chicago boy murdered in 1955, while his father references Tamir Rice, another boy shot just because he's black. This connection across time becomes central as Jerome discovers he's part of a long, tragic lineage of ghost boys wandering between worlds after violent deaths. Jerome navigated life as a good kid, avoiding trouble despite being teased about his weight. His family worked hard, mother at Holiday Inn, father driving a sanitation truck, grandmother keeping house. Every morning, his mother warned, "Come straight home." With his sister Kim, Jerome moved through their dangerous neighborhood strategically, not too fast, appearing to run, nor too slow, seeming confrontational. They passed drug dealers and abandoned buildings daily, though school bullies remained their greatest threat. His grandmother, troubled by premonitions, had Jerome share three good things each day, her magical number representing awe, optimism, joy. A ritual for finding goodness amid hardship. On his final day, Jerome befriends Carlos, a new student. When bullies corner them, Carlos scares them off with what appears to be a gun, later revealing it's just a toy. Before parting, Carlos lends Jerome the plastic gun, an innocent gesture with fatal consequences. The courthouse scenes expose America's racial dynamics. Officer Moore testifies that he thought Jerome was at least 25 and a dangerous man, describing him as big, hulking, scary, while Jerome's ghost watches, visible only to Sarah. When Jerome's father challenges, "A grown man? Two grown men, armed, threatened by a boy?" cries of "Black Lives Matter" erupt. Damning facts emerge. The officer never identified himself, never ordered Jerome to drop the gun, and fired immediately. When asked if he rendered aid afterward, he answers a quiet no. The 911 operator testifies she received a call about a boy with a toy gun, but only relayed a boy with a gun, omitting the crucial detail that might have saved Jerome's life. When questioned why, she repeatedly says, "I don't know." Despite showing personal regret, the judge rules there isn't enough evidence to charge Officer Moore with excessive force, manslaughter, or murder. Justice remains elusive. Officer Moore's daughter Sarah can see Jerome's ghost, a metaphor for seeing beyond racial barriers. Their connection explores racial reconciliation, with Sarah's privileged life contrasting sharply with Jerome's. Her bedroom, three times the size of his entire living space, highlights the profound economic disparities between their worlds. When they meet, Jerome's anger is palpable. He sees in Sarah's life everything his family lacks: security, abundance, and privilege. Sarah struggles between defending her father and confronting uncomfortable truths. "I don't want to be liked because my dad killed you," she confesses, beginning their understanding. The pivotal moment comes when they watch the unedited shooting footage together. It reveals what her father couldn't see. Jerome was clearly just a child with a toy gun. "He didn't see you," she whispers. Transformed by awareness, Sarah creates a website documenting police violence statistics. Black Americans are shot at 2.5 times the rate of white people, despite comprising only 13% of the population. Through her evolution, we witness how change begins with seeing uncomfortable truths. Jerome meets Emmett Till, a ghost boy who died in 1955, who reveals hundreds of ghost boys exist, all black boys killed under similar circumstances throughout American history. Emmett shares his story. As a 14-year-old from Chicago visiting Mississippi, he was unfamiliar with Southern racial codes. At Bryant's grocery, he bought gum and said goodbye to Mrs. Bryant. When his speech impediment made him stutter, "What's wrong?" Mrs. Bryant misinterpreted it as whistling at her. This misunderstanding led to violence. Mrs. Bryant's husband and another man kidnapped Emmett at night, beat him, shot him, and sank his body in the Tallahatchie River. Jerome joins Emmett and other ghost boys in a mournful cry, "Not fair, I died too young, too soon." Through Emmett's story, Jerome realizes he's part of a historical pattern of racial violence. Emmett teaches him that bearing witness is crucial. Telling these stories honors the dead and creates possibility for change. Jerome's family struggles with grief while Kim conceals that Carlos gave Jerome the toy gun. Carlos carries this guilt. His gift indirectly led to Jerome's death, creating an invisible barrier between the families. When Carlos finally visits and confesses, "I gave him the gun," his admission brings tears of both sadness and relief. Rather than causing more pain, this truth catalyzes healing. The novel reveals how trauma affects people differently. Jerome's parents become emotionally withdrawn, acting like robots. His father burying himself in work, his mother staring at old photographs. Meanwhile, Grandma and Kim don't mind showing their grief, making them seem more alive. Through Carlos's dedication, creating an altar with handmade candlesticks, colorful drawings, Jerome's favorite drumstick, and his photo, we see friendship transcending death. His family brings Day of the Dead traditions to Chicago, becoming a beautiful metaphor for how communities bridge divides through shared grief and humanity. Jerome recounts his death in the novel's final moments, running through Green Acres with Carlos's toy gun, feeling powerful, like in a video game, until a police car approaches. Pow, pow, I fall. Blood flows into the dirt and snow. Dying, he tries to say toy, but no one hears. His final thoughts of family. The story culminates on November 1st, merging Grandma's All Saints Day with the Rodriguez family's Day of the Dead at Jerome's grave. Carlos's family brings tamales and sugar skulls, which Mrs. Rodriguez explains celebrate life rather than death, transforming grief into something life-affirming. Emmett appears with thousands of ghost boys who will wander until there are no more murders, until skin color doesn't matter. Jerome's final words resonate. "Bear witness. My tale is told. Wake. Only the living can make the world better." This transforms readers from observers to agents of change, challenging us to create a world where black children can live without fear, where ghost boys can finally rest.